Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back to So You Want to Be in Ministry. I'm Tim, and we are all about educating you if you're thinking about jumping into ministry, equipping you if you're already in ministry, encouraging you if you're in a tough season and thinking about jumping out of ministry. And as always, we want to empower those of you that aren't really interested in jumping into full-time vocational ministry, but we want to empower you to follow godly leaders well. And we got another one on the podcast today. CJ Nissen is with us. He's the lead pastor of Ravenna Baptist Church. I've known CJ since our college days. He was a few years ahead of me, but if he married someone in my class, and we talk about that a little bit in this episode. They've had an interesting journey. He's been part of several different types of ministries and different types of churches, from church planting to revitalization to senior pastor to youth pastor to just trying to make it. You're going to hear his story. I think it's well worth the listen, and it should be encouraging if you're in one of the tougher things that where you thought something was going to happen in this ministry position and then it didn't quite work out. This specific episode should be encouraging to you. So let's get into this episode with CJ. Well, hey, CJ, glad to have you on the podcast today. It's good to catch up and see you again.
Yeah, Tim, how long has it been?
Holy cow. Maybe it might be almost 20 years.
Goodness. Are we that old?
Yeah. We are. We're the old guys in the room now.
You're now the old guys. That's awesome.
We are the other side of it. Yeah. And I knew your wife better just because she was in my class. But yeah, it was good. We had a good time at Bible college.
She was reminding me that you were in her class, and that would have put me about 3 years ahead of you. I think I was a super senior when she was here as a freshman. So, you know, I had that senior itch as a, you know, pastor student, got to get married. And she was an unsuspecting freshman, and I swept her off her feet. So,
yep. Yeah. But hey, you guys work great together. I get to watch from afar through her social media.
That's awesome.
Cool. Well, tell us a little bit of your story of how God brought you, like what's your current role, and then how did God bring you to this place?
Yeah, 100%. So I'm currently a pastor of a church in kind of, it's funny, it's a medium-sized church in a small town in Western Michigan. If you're not familiar with Western Michigan, it's kind of like one big town where everybody just lives on 2 to 5 acres. So it's spread out. So even though our town is only incorporated with like what, 1400 people, the whole Western Michigan is just a huge area. So our church is surprising in size for a town so small. But we've been here about a year and a half. And I am the lead pastor. I've got a staff of three full-time ministry staff, and then five part-timers.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. So tell us how God got you here. Like, give us the backstory, any highlights that you want to hit, and how you ended up at Ravenna.
Well, it's a long walk, Tim. Where do you want me to start?
Wherever you want to. You can start all the way from, like, salvation if you want to. You can start leaving college and heading into ministry, wherever you'd like to.
You got it. Well, so I was born into a family of believers. My parents were rebellious young adults, and then they met one another and they got saved, and they moved to near where my dad grew up, and they joined a little Baptist church, kind of really conservative old country church, and that's where I was raised. But because my parents had a little bit of a past, we kind of sidestepped an awful lot of legalism. You know, that wasn't part of our home, even though, you know, kind of a little bit of the world I was grew up in, a lot of rules. But those sweet people in that dear little country church loved us and discipled me. And I remember going to Bible college, and goodness, I remember thinking and sitting in some of my theology classes going, I already know this. How do I know this? And I had forgotten where I picked it up, but it was because I, you know, my parents made sure the church doors were open 3 times a week. We were there, and it was there as a teenager where I didn't have a ton of direction as to what I wanted to do with my life. And we had a missionary speaker come, and he was a aviation missionary. And I didn't even know that was a thing. And he came and gave his presentation. I'm like, you're telling me I can work for Jesus and fly airplanes in exotic places? And he was like, yeah. And I'm like, you don't want to do that. So that's when I surrendered my heart to ministry. I wish it was because I could say it was because I had this like deep call for lost people in my life. But no, it was more like I want to fly planes into the jungle and tell them people about Jesus. So and so you know, that whole time I was working at a camp in my high school years as a lifeguard, and again also more sitting under really great Bible teaching. And so I went to Bible college thinking missions, and I didn't quite gel with our missions professor, so I switched my major over to pastoral, because in the ministry world, a pastoral degree is like the same as going to a state university and getting a business degree. It's like one of those degrees you just get when you don't know what else to get because you can do anything with it. So I got my pastor degree and ended up being called to a camp right out of college. And so our first ministry, Becky and I got married on graduated from college on May 18th, got married May 19th, and a week later we're in our first ministry at a camp up here in Michigan. Yeah, it was a little bit of a whirlwind.
Yeah.
But I had been working at this camp up here for several summers, so they asked me to join the staff full time. So I moved us up here as newlyweds. Probably a good thing that our first ministry was 8 hours from home. We figured out a lot of things, you know, on our own, and it was really good for our marriage. But just her and I up here to camp. And one of the things that's part of that story is when I was up here in the off season, it got kind of quiet. And I decided I did want to have a gospel focus in my life. I wanted to have a community impact and wanted to reach my community for Jesus. And I realized that I didn't know anybody, especially in the off season at camp. And so I kept driving by this little township fire department. I didn't grow up playing with fire trucks or have any desire to do that, but I every time I drove by, I went, I wonder if there are unsaved guys there. And I joined that fire department, and guess what I found out there were. So those are some ministry connections I still have to this day. And I joined that little township fire department for the gospel, and just incredible opportunity there while I was working at the camp. We left the camp after about 3.5 years, went back to Iowa. Part of my story is I didn't feel like as a teenager I really connected with teenagers, so I never really had considered youth ministry, mm-hmm. but God called us into a youth ministry, and we had an incredible redemptive ministry in Wisconsin for 7 years. Nice. So we left the camp in Michigan, moved to Wisconsin, had this incredible redemptive ministry. It was also a smaller town. But we had a great ministry to teenagers that were, you know, there were two types of teenagers. There was those that were going to graduate and get out of Dodge and go live their life. And then there were those kids that were, you know, didn't have those as means. And so, we had an incredible ministry to both, but I think that it was those kids who didn't have a lot of hope, that we really were able to speak into, did a lot of really cool outreach, had a lot of concert kids, a lot of skateboard punks. Man, we just had so many kids meet Christ. It was such a fun ministry to have a ministry to hurting students. I had just a quick anecdote. We had this one kid that would come. His name was Austin. He would come. We didn't know why he came. He didn't really have a connection to the church, but he would come to student ministry, did not claim Christ, claimed to be an atheist. He didn't want to really have anything to do with religion, but he would come every single night, the kind of kid that went and got a teardrop tattoo on his face because he thought that would make him cool. That was the crowd that he wanted to impress. One night I pulled him aside. He'd started bringing friends to him to youth group. One night I pulled him aside and said, dude, I'm so glad you're here, Austin. I really am. I do got to ask, you don't seem really interested in faith and kind of what we're teaching, but man, you're here. You got a good attitude. And why are you here? And he says to me, he goes, man, it's because I feel safe here. This kid slept with a baseball bat because his dad would get so terribly drunk and come home and hurt him. And he would come because it was the only place he felt loved by adults who, you know, cared about him. And what a, that story there, just that, you know, that made it all so real. And that's what we just really felt it was about. And so we were there for about 7 years, and Becky and I kind of came to a place where we were thinking, you know, hey, you know, we'd accomplished what we wanted to do. The ministry was strong. We were going to leave it in good hands. We started praying about it and being open to what God was calling. She has a history of photography. I've done a lot of videography and web design. And so these promotional things that I picked up at the camp, we thought were really strong points of ours. So we started praying about what our next phase of ministry was and about God really saying, hey, why not church planting? But we were terrified about fundraising for our personal finances or for the church. So we just kind of were like, God, I don't know what to do with that. We kicked it around for a couple years. And then I got a call from a church in Des Moines that I had worked at in college that said, hey, we're looking for a seasoned youth pastor with church planting ambition. We want to plant a campus. Would you be willing to do that? Or would you be interested in that? And Becky and I kind of looked at each other and went, yeah, that's exactly what we want to do. So we moved back to Des Moines in 2011, and come to find out it was a little bit more youth pastor than it was church planting. But we had a great ministry there for 4 years. And then through some circumstances, we decided it was time to plant that church and with the church's support. And we started raising a core team and raising funds. And God brought that all together. In the midst of, however, us planting this campus church for this church, there arose a really bitter staff conflict that didn't involve me and that I was unaware of. Mm. And so we'll come to find out a little bit later that my motivations for wanting to start a church were because I wanted to use the giftings that I felt God had given me to impact the kingdom. And I read a quote by a church strategist who said that church planting is the single greatest method of evangelism under this side of heaven, or under the sun, or something like that, under heaven. And I went, okay, so that's what I want to be a part of, because I've always felt like an evangelist. And so we really pushed in. So that was our motivation. That was really our heart. Just God, this is what you called us to. This is how you gifted us. We're evangelists, and this is where we're going to thrive. So God, let's do it. Come to find out that the church's motivation, or at least the leadership within the midst of that staff conflict, felt a little bit more like mom and dad wanting to have a baby to save the marriage.
Okay.
And so we got started, and most of the staff at the main campus resigned.
Wow.
So obviously we just had stepped out on faith, and that church experienced a major trauma, and we've really prayed about it and wondered what our best play here was. And we thought, let's just be the silver lining. Let's be the proof that in the midst of all this traumatic situation, that perhaps maybe the best thing we can do for the kingdom of God is to show up and go, hey, look, God's still moving. Yeah. And our church was taken off, and that church was struggling. And we showed up that course of that year where they were without a pastor, and we were going, hey, look, God's doing something incredible over here. He's using you. God is in the midst of all this. You're kind of thinking that we got to focus on us for a little bit, but I want you to know this church is having a gospel impact over here, and it's incredible. Come watch him move in the midst of this situation, this season. And it was really beautiful. We really felt like that was what God asked us to do. But then they ended up hiring a new pastor who just had a totally different ambition. And within a couple weeks of him being there, we became independent. And through a series of decisions that were not ours, I'll spare you the details, but it was hurtful and it was scary. And here I am with my family going, God, we surrendered. I don't think this is about us. We didn't set up to build my kingdom, I don't think. But here we are without a safety net, without health insurance, new churches. To God's glory, 70% of our new church had not been attending church, at least when we found them. Many of them never have attended church. They were new converts. And I don't know if you know this about new converts. Typically, the last step of their discipleship is tithing, so giving faithfully. One of the things that was really beautiful in that season of going, what are we going to do about these finances, is every church planter I knew had to deliver pizzas at some point in time. So I said, what am I trained to do that could provide for my family and be a blessing to the community? And what came to mind was I was serving on a volunteer fire department there. And we were near the Des Moines metro area. So I was like, I'm going to start looking for maybe a dispatcher job or a job where I can, you know, be bivocational in the first responder world. And I got hired by one of the metro departments as a part-time firefighter EMT. And it was really a beautiful scenario, Tim, because most people who are bivocational find themselves having to split their time. And also, they ran 24-hour shifts. So I could go and work a 24 to 36-hour week shift straight and only be away from my family one night a week. And it was really a gift from God. So we were at that church for 6.5 years. We preached, or I was on that fire department for 4.5 years, and it was a really neat season of ministry. And I know one of the bents of your, you know, one of the goals of your podcast is, you know, just to discuss how ministry changes you and gives you opportunities. My wife Becky and I prayed about it. She got invited to be a weekend house parent at a home for single mothers. And so here we are in the midst of planting this church, which we already felt like was a pretty big ask of the Lord for the kingdom ministry. Becky got to minister to these young ladies with these crisis pregnancies. And I found myself spending 24 to 36 hours with my brothers and sisters in the fire department who had worked through some really traumatic, you know, situations in their own life. Yeah. And we just went, man, everywhere we look is gospel oriented ministry. And it was so rich. So that's a season of ministry that was, it started out no safety net, scary, traumatic in the sense that there was this huge staff conflict that led us there. Really wild how it all came together. And Becky and I found ourselves, not only were our needs being met, but we were like, we get to be used in so many different ways. It was really incredible. We just were surprised that God was using us. I mean, we were just like, this is incredible to us. So we were there for about 6.5 years, and then it depends on how you count the days, but then God called, then out of nowhere, I remember just always the whole time being open if God wanted us to do something else. I apparently applied hit the yes, I'm interested button on some church headhunting website, and I got a call from a guy at a big old church in Texas that said, hey, we're looking for a community outreach pastor. Come to find out that the church was massive, and to the tune of, I said, what's the, you know, you're doing community outreach, what kind of missions budget are we reaching our community with here? And I think he said $2.5 million.
Oh, wow.
Now, when you're a guy who just spent the last 6.5 years of your life paying for communion supplies out of your own bank checking account for a church, to be invited to help spend $2.5 million for the kingdom of God, that was one of those I went, ooh. And then he said, this church has two really big things that we're really invested in right now. One is first responders. He didn't know anything about our background. He goes, one is first responders, and the other is single mothers. And I went,
oh, wow.
Okay. Lord, you don't need to hit me with a 2x4. So we did the hardest thing that we ever had to do in ministry that will remain, I believe, the hardest thing we ever had to do in ministry, and that's say goodbye to the church that we planted. And you know, when you're in ministry, people come and go, okay? Yeah. Over the years, we saw people come and go. There was a season there where things were dark because we lost a good number of people in one move, and people come and go. And you know, after 6.5 years, the church was surviving, was going to survive. I think the statistic is 60% of church plants don't survive.
It's definitely around there. Yeah.
It's high. And we went, this one's going to survive. We believe that in some form or another. And, but there was a real sense. This is really hard on me. There was a real sense of, but these were the people that stayed.
Yeah.
These were the people that were invested. I look in the church and go, you know, the core group that came with us, that was still with us. I'm like, I know for a fact that guy had a choice of making a year-end gift to the church or buying a truck.
Yeah.
And he chose church.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I know that family doesn't have a lot of money, but I know that they are, every last dime that they have is going into this church. Dude, I went, it hurt so bad. I went, am I the quitter? Did I abandon? Am I the one leaving? That hurt me for about 6 months as I really struggled through that transition. But we felt like God was calling us. The story took another wild turn where we were on our way to Texas, having done all that, and the guy that hired me at this big old church calls me, and we were literally sitting in a Days Inn in Tulsa, Oklahoma, halfway between Iowa and Texas, moving down there. All our stuff was in a U-Haul out in the parking lot, and I get called into a Zoom meeting where it's the guy that hired me and the CFO of the church sitting there, and he says, CJ, I want you to know I resigned today. And I said, that's really nice. That's great. Your timing is awesome. You're going to be around, though, while I get there to onboard. And he goes, well, no, today's my last day. And I don't know. I don't know how much you've been around, but I've been around long enough to know when somebody says they resigned today from a church and today's your last day,
you
can read between the lines and go, I don't think this is really voluntary.
Yeah.
So we got there, and I had been given a job description in the hiring process. And I said, well, I guess I'm going to do this because I don't have a boss and my team was destroyed because of this whole thing. And I thought I'm just going to do what I was given. And for a year, it was really, very difficult. There was a lot of team dynamics that were bad, a lot of toxicity, a lot of anger. I mean, not for me. I just got there, man. I just fell off the hay. I just fell off the hay rack from Iowa. I don't know nothing. I don't know nothing about these big churches. I don't know any of this. I'm just going, I have a piece of paper. I'm going to do this. And so I did. But, Tim, this is really what God did in my heart there. That whole year was very difficult. And we knew we weren't long for Texas. But every day I showed up and I went, you know what? I serve at the pleasure of the King. The Lord is good, and his ways are good, and his thoughts are good, even when I don't understand them. You know, I was dealing with the emotions of walking away from the church that we planted. I was dealing with the emotions of wondering if I moved my family across country, away from all our networks and everybody we knew. And I went, you know what? The King has us here for a reason. I serve at the pleasure of the King, and the King is good. And the King is good. And so I'm going to show up. And, you know, I already knew this about faithfulness because I taught it to teenagers and adults for decades.
Mm-hmm.
But faithfulness is long obedience in the right direction. It's just waking up every day and going, I'm going to be obedient today. People want to know what discipleship is. You want to win in your Christian walk. Wake up in the morning and go, God, how can I be obedient today?
Yeah.
And just do it. And just be obedient. And if you have a bad day, you wake up the next day and go, I'm going to be obedient today, even though yesterday wasn't awesome.
Yep.
And I said, I'm going to do that. I'm going to have a good attitude. The Lord has me here. In the midst of it, I got to do some really incredible ministry on the side. Like, God brought these interesting ways of using us, even though I felt like I was spinning my tires with my job description. And it was really beautiful. And then God called us, you know, after a year, God called us to the Sweet Church in Western Michigan. And, you know, I wasn't sure I wanted to be a pastor anymore, a lead pastor. I just wanted to, you know, work on my giftings and serve the kingdom. And God brought this. I had applied, Tim, probably that whole year I was there, I had applied for probably 60 different different types of jobs, but never a senior pastor job.
Yeah.
And this was the second one. I said, okay, Lord, well, I'm going to throw my resume there and see what happens. And these sweet people, this is, and we've been here a year and a half, almost 2 years. And I really believe that the Lord is blessing that obedience. I really do. These sweet people love us. They're so kind and generous. It sounds so stupid, so I apologize. Well, last week, some guy in our church, we were on the golf league. I joined golf league not because I like golf. I'm a terrible golfer. But I show up because I want to have a ministry of these men, right? And here I am sitting with the worst handicap in the whole league, you know? And this sweet gentleman in our church comes up and notices that I'm playing on 20-year-old golf clubs from Walmart. He goes, your golf clubs are terrible. Have you ever thought about getting new clubs? I'm like, man, I'm not going to go buy new clubs. I am under no illusion that my golf game is suffering because I have terrible golf clubs. He goes, okay, well, go get fitted. So I went to the site. He goes, go to this place. He gives me a time, and I show up. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing here. Anyway, the dude bought me golf clubs. So I'm like, I know it's stupid, but I'm like, these people are so kind and generous, and I'm sitting here just going, I'm feeling like God is just going, hey, you know, and this is a message I want to tell everybody in ministry. Just be faithful. Just be faithful. And no matter what the Lord is no respecter of persons. He doesn't owe us a measure of success. I tried to build my kingdom and it was terrible. And so I just want to be faithful and watch what God does with it. And so that's how we ended up in Michigan.
Yeah, that's cool, man. There's a lot of good stuff in there. As you were navigating fire department, working with single moms, all that stuff as a family, could you give pastors, churches, like one or two thoughts on how to connect with your community? Not everybody's going to be able to go just be in it by getting a job, but what are a couple ways that you could connect with your community thinking through that?
Yeah, so I have a lot of thoughts on how to connect with your community in the way the churches can have a real impact. First of all, I think gone are the days where churches can just exist for an hour and a half on Sunday morning, and then people go to the buffet, and then, you know, the week goes by.
Yeah.
Churches have got to see themselves in the scenario of, look, this is a local embassy of the kingdom of God, and every day we're on the front lines in a foreign land trying to deliver the message of the king to these people. And that I think takes so much out of the box thinking. I think you just look for opportunities. I mean, God puts everybody in spaces and places. Everybody has a different space and place. And until everybody really does see themselves as ambassadors and missionaries, you're not going to affect anything. Like you're not like, I went to that job one going, yeah, like the fire department going, yeah, one God gave me this to provide for my family. The other one going, I think I'm a missionary to firemen. And so I didn't have to show up and be the best. I carried bags. That's all. You know what I mean? I handed them tools, right? I pulled hose. I carried the EMS bags. But when you show up with that attitude of going, hey, I'm here to influence these people for the gospel, not earn everybody's respect as whatever. Man, that changes stuff. God blesses that. I really think so. I guess everybody believing that they are a missionary to wherever the spaces and places God calls them to is hugely powerful. But I think also, too, churches as an organization with eyes wide open as to both the needs and the hurts and the opportunities in their community can really have a really great thing. So, we were in the seventh largest town in America, right? And while I was there for the year, I was making these connections with all these different nonprofits.
Okay.
So in that scenario, our job was to come alongside nonprofits and encourage and resource. And I really found myself pastoring some of the leaders of these things, because running a nonprofit's tough. Okay. Yeah. Whether it's a home for single moms, or whether it's a food bank, or whether it's whatever, who do these people have to put their arm around their shoulder and go, hey, you're doing kingdom work here. How can we love you and pray for them? That goes a long way. But in small towns like we are, in every small town, there's an overworked soccer mom who's decided to take on the job of parks and rec director in their little town. And you come along going, "Hey, we want to bless you. How can we bring bounce houses to your, Easter egg event?" That stuff, it sounds so cheesy and dumb. It has a huge impact. It speaks volumes to your community. And I know that sounds so low rent, but it really does make a difference. One of the here's a story. One of the things we do this thing every year where we take a Sunday off and from church and we go out and serve the community. Well, we painted 80 fire hydrants. Okay, it's dumb. Okay, it's not that's like not you know not rocket science theory what we're doing. But there was a but now there is a in our town. There is a supervisor, a township supervisor, that we helped him make his town look as best as we could, which makes him look good. And now I have an open door to share the gospel with that guy. Look, that's the gospel, the kingdom is won one person at a time. And that was worth it. An hour and a half to paint the fire hydrants in town for our church. To share the gospel with one person, dude, that's worth it.
So you've had a lot of different roles. Some have been lead roles, some have been second chair roles. What would you say? You've talked a little bit about it, but give us like one or two characteristics. If somebody's walking in, they're going to be a secondary role. They're going to be a second chair role. What are one or two characteristics that they just have to have or be willing to allow to be developed within them as they follow a lead chair?
Well, how I felt when I was a staff pastor on a staff is I felt very much like they're the giver, I'm the receiver, they're the teller, I'm the hearer, they're the boss. And part of that, a little bit, I know cultures change. Part of that comes a little bit from the fire department hierarchy, chain of command stuff. So I never really had a hard time going, yes, sir, I'll be on it, get on it. However, I wish I could go back 20, 25 years ago and say this to young CJ and go, you have, first of all, anyone in any authority or lead role is carrying a lot of weight. You see him as an authoritarian and a teller and a somebody who gives orders. That's a person who's carrying a lot of weight. And I actually work for a pastor who we had a lot of conflict. He was a very dynamic personality, big ideas, pusher, right? It's like always pushing. For the first half of the time I worked for him, I viewed him as a bit of a dictator, kind of an maybe. I might have even thought at a time that he was a narcissist. This is a guy who thinks it's all about him, and I'm just a cog in his machine. I did some. I about halfway through working for him, a couple years in, I went, I have got to. I got to make this right. I got to figure this out. I got to figure out what makes him tick, and I got to figure out how to make our relationship good because this guy's a key to my success in ministry, and I don't want to just be his grunt. I want us to be partners in this. I got to figure this guy out. And I read an article about it, and come to find out that people with this type of drive and this type of movement, one of the things about them that's so tragic is the stress level that they carry because they literally, people who are really charismatic and really effective are told that. There's a lot of people telling them, "You're great. You're a great preacher. You're a great pastor. You're great." All these things. So the downside of that is they believe that they're carrying on their shoulders, like their giftedness is what's paying everybody's salary. Their giftedness is what's keeping the organization afloat. If their giftedness ever falters, if every Sunday isn't delivering the best, if they're not showing up delivering the best sermon every single week, that means giving's going to be down, which means that we're not going to be able to do this, and that means that person's going to get hurt, and that staff member might have to get let go, there's so much stress in that. So I read about this personality type, and this is a person under high stress. And what I came to realize, I'm a pusher. So like, if you tell me something, I'm going to go, oh, let me push back on you. And that was the problem. And I'm like, why can't this guy take feedback? I assumed it was because he thought he was right all the time. He's right. I'm wrong. I'm just a guy. Come to find out, when I studied him, I learned that it's not that he's right and I'm wrong. It's that pushback that he doesn't know what to do with feels like a threat to all the balls that he's juggling. He's juggling all these balls. And when I push back and go, you're doing that wrong, or this is a different direction we should go, that felt like a ball that he was losing control of. And so what I decided to do instead, and this sounds really dumb, but I decided instead, you know what? I'm gonna be an encourager. I'm gonna come along. I'm gonna be the guy that's in the back going, hey, that was really great. So this guy feels like he's got to show up every Sunday with the best sermon, or else people are gonna leave. I mean, the church was growing. People are gonna leave. It's gonna be my fault. Then every Sunday, I'm gonna tell him that was the best sermon he ever preached. And I'll go into his office and go, dude, I love it when you said this. That really meant something to me. The dude, I kid you not, Tim, he came alive. Like,
wow.
It was like watching a wilted flower just all of a sudden bloom. Like, his eyes would light up. He would just, it wasn't because I was stroking his ego. I don't think it was that. It was because I was giving him assurance that I was going to be okay. Like, you are doing well and taking care of me. Thank you. And that was my gift to him. And we are great friends today. And so I would say that if you're in a second chair, man, don't look at that person as a roadblock as to your ministry goals and dreams. Say, how can we be? You have a role to play in figuring them out. It's not just a submissive role. It's not just a fall in line or you're going to get canned role. It's a dude. When you look good, I'm going to make you look good. Because when you look good, I look good. And when I look good, you look good. Man, let's make each other look as good as we can in front of everybody who's watching. And that's where I found real teamwork works.
Yeah. So in your lead role, what is the one characteristic that you look for, you just love about any of your second chair roles that you've served with?
That I have working for me?
Well, currently, maybe in the past, as you even had the church plant, and it could have even been a higher leadership volunteer, but it's just that there's one or two characteristics that when you know that person has it, you're just like, I know they're going to be great to work with.
Yeah, well, I'm a little bit different in the fact that I'm not, you know, on the disc scale, if you're familiar with the disc. Yeah. I'm an influencer. I'm not a driver. Okay. So what works for me is different from other people. For me, it's about relationship. I want to have a relationship with the people I work with. Everybody's compromised by their own history and their own training and what they picked up along the way. I don't want to over dramatize this, but in the first responder world, it's a high stress environment. Uh-huh. There's no room for people sitting back and you know, it's like, just say what you're thinking. Okay, just get it out there, because none of us want to drop this car on this guy because you didn't, you know, you just wanted to keep it to yourself. So for me, I like to operate in a scenario, in a team environment. I'm like, dude, if you're, just say it. Like, don't church it up for me. Just say it. But I need to know at the end of the day, like, okay, you said it. I heard you. This is where we're going to go. And you go, you got it. Let's go that direction. So I like an open communication, but also, you know, there has to be a respect. If we want to make it theological, look, we believe that the Holy Spirit ordains people for ministry and puts people in positions. And as you know, my role current as a senior pastor, and I'm not trying to take any leadership or take any respect that isn't owed me, but you know, the Holy Spirit brought us here, right? Like, the Holy Spirit worked among these people to bring us here. And as a second person, you got to go, okay, that's true. And this is true of every pastor I worked with. You know, I thought ways about one guy and I thought ways about the other guy. And I'm like, I'll never do that in ministry. And with my team, if you have a notebook in your office, and on the cover of the notebook, it says, CJ is a big fool. And in that notebook is a list of everything you never want to do when you're a lead pastor. Great. Because I kept notes too. I watch my senior pastors go, I'm not going to do that when I'm a senior pastor someday. And I don't. You know, that's okay with me. But at the end of the day, I got to know you have my back. And that's, and again, that's probably another fire departmentism, I guess. I got to know that I can trust you. I got to know that you're with me. I got to know that we're working together as a team. I got to know that we can run hot. We can say it as it is. We can do this thing. But when we walk out those doors, we're going in the same direction. Okay. And I don't lead by unanimous consent. I lead by consensus, right? You know, this doesn't have to be what we're doing here doesn't have to be what you would prefer, but I have to know that you're going to be able to support it.
Yeah.
So let's go. That's where it goes. So, I don't remember the question, but that's what I want out of my team for a good team dynamic. Yeah. But I also want to be friends. You know, I also think that I run hot, so I say what I think. I want to know that people sitting around the table with me can say what they think, and then we can all go get chicken wings together and have a great evening, right?
Yeah, I hear you, man. What has been some of the best advice you've gotten as you've been in ministry? Like maybe one statement, maybe there's a story or a moment that just sticks out where you're like, oh man, I needed that one.
The best advice I ever got in ministry.
Let me do it this way.
Sure.
What's something that you would like, if somebody comes to you and they're like, hey, I'm thinking about jumping into ministry. What's something I need to know that I don't know? I probably don't know right now.
I don't know if it's so much knowledge to pick up. I think I wish if I could go back and talk to myself 25 years ago.
Yeah.
I've had to learn a lot of humility the hard way.
Okay.
And, you know, I wish I could say it's not true, but I've had people pull me aside and go, dude, your arrogance is off the charts right now. You need to dial it back, right? You don't know everything. And when I, you know, just why don't you shut your mouth and open your ears a little bit? That sounds so harsh. That's why. But actually, I would do that when I actually with that fire department in Iowa, the deputy chief gave me the opportunity to take all the new guys coming on the department, guys and gals in the department, take them aside and talk to them, just me and them.
Okay.
And that was my advice to them. And I would say the same in ministry. Hey, you're new here. The best thing you can do is keep your mouth shut and watch and learn and listen and grow. And if you think it should be, you just, if every fiber you're being is saying, I want it to go this way or say this, write it down. Write it down and compare, because you know you want to. That's how you grow. As you challenge your ideas against other people, and you let them speak into it. And when you talk first, you lose out on the opportunity of other people being able to share. And there's some people with some really great insight. And I wish I had plenty of people that I could call up, like those first couple years of ministry, and go, hey, this guy's really thwarting me, and he's being a bonehead, and I'm so mad. And they go, yeah, that's awesome. But the people I think back that had the most impact on me in ministry were the ones that say, hey, why don't you come over here a second? Look, man, you're blowing it, and here's how. And I'm like, and that was hurt. That was hard.
Yeah.
But man, I have such respect for those people that they would pull me aside and go, dude, this is the direction you're going. You got to watch yourself, because this is about what's to happen. And I go, I have several anecdotes where I'm like, people saved me from real disaster because I just went, I hate that you had to say that to me. Well, I'm going to receive it, and I'm going to act on it. I'm going to change. And okay. And that's huge.
Yeah, it is huge. That is a big deal. And there is a level of humility that you can take it in those moments and learn from it and grow. Yeah, that's a big deal. What about a word of encouragement for pastors out there that are in their rough season? Their church isn't full of sweet, generous people that are kind. They're in it, and it's rough. And they're fighting. They're trying to fight to be faithful. What word do you have for them?
Oh man. Well, first of all, I hope I didn't paint that as like everything's all rosy and awesome right now.
It never is.
I don't want people to go, oh, you know, gosh, if we could, maybe I'll move to West Michigan. Maybe that'd be great. I would say this. As I look back in the last 20, almost 24 years, 25 years of ministry, I would point to seasons, and I would go, that was a season where we got to watch God do awesome stuff. That was a season where I felt very alone. That was a season where unexpected blessing and unexpected being used in unexpected ways happened. That was a season where I just had to grind it out. That was a season where it was hurtful. And Tim, just to be honest with you, like I think you're getting this about me. Like I'm so, confidence is not probably something I've really struggled with in ministry.
I knew that when we were in college.
but to have discovered in the midst of church planning what a panic attack was, to find myself on the floor in my bathroom, I can't breathe. Why can't I breathe right now? Yeah. And just afraid. Afraid for the church, afraid for my family. Wondering what God's plan was. I never thought like that. I guess that's part of my story to look back now and go, like I started and say, when I think about that period of time, God, I was going, this isn't working, what I was focused on, and find out the blessings came from over here and right and left and behind, and all of a sudden, like in that time period that we were bivocational church planners taking a $30,000 salary from the church and going, what are we doing here? And Becky working for a nonprofit with, there's no money, you know,
yeah.
In the midst of that, we can't figure out how it happened, but all of our debt got paid off. Like all of it, like our cars, everything, this wasn't the Dave Ramsey plan either. This was the Forrest Gump plan. We were like, oh, what up? You know, like all of a sudden we're just being faithful. And all of a sudden we found ourselves, we're out of debt. We're like, how did that happen? I don't know. Appraisal, you know, like that was the darkest time. And yet that was a time where I felt like, oh my goodness, God, we got into some so incredible things. So I guess that would be my advice. And there are times of reward too. I mean, that's what we feel like we're in right now. But I would say, look, if it's not coming from the direction that you want it to, watch how God's working in other ways and find that blessing and hold on to it. You know, one of the things that carried me through that church planting thing that was so hard is to know that 70% of my church wasn't attending church before they came to us. That's not a big, it wasn't a big number, but I went, yeah, God used us to do that. And that comforted me. And so, just grab on to where you see God working and be faithful. Just be faithful.
Yeah, I loved your suggestion. Like, look at it in seasons, because I was thinking through just the years that I've had in ministry, and I was like, yeah, there has been different seasons. Like, I could put a title on it and just kind of go, that's what that was. And so when you're in it, you kind of have to think back to some of those titles that are more pleasant to think about. And know that you know, it hasn't always been this season. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Well, and I mean, think about going from a church planner to being the local outreach pastor for the 10th largest church in North America. That should have been like if there's ever a grass is greener moment, you know, that would have been it for me in ministry. I thought, that's it. That's my grass is green. It's like God's, you know, the clouds parted, the beams came in. That was where, you know. Yeah. God's plan wasn't God's plan. I got down there and I was a fourth tier event planner. I wasn't even registering on anyone's scale. But what God taught me was I need you to be a pastor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that was nothing what I thought it was going to be, but God used that to change, redirect me and go, this is where I want you. Yeah. I wouldn't trade. I would do it all again if I knew what it was worth, and I would do it all again.
Awesome. Well, cool, man. Any last words for us before we get out of here?
You know, I just want to affirm you. I think this is an incredible venue to communicate these things. I think that I love the idea of pouring into young leaders, young Christian leaders, those that are thinking about ministry. And I would say my biggest encouragement is just that, man. We work for the pleasure of the King.
Yep.
And the King is good. Yep. The King is so good. And Tim, in the midst of all that, job loss and hardship with people I work with and staff conflict that didn't even vote, you know, being orphaned as a church plant. Tim, I'm saying you're 24. God has paid every bill. I don't think I've even missed one paycheck in 24 years. Like, and that's not everybody's story, but that's ours. God's good. He's a good King. When you work for the pleasure of the King, you're faithful. He rewards that. And so anybody that's going through anything right now, my biggest advice is, look, just wake up in the morning and go, what has God called you to today? Whatever your ambition or vision or dreams or whatever, just put that aside. Just go, what is God calling me to do today? And just be faithful to that. And I just think he rewards that so much.
Yeah, I love that, man. I love the quote. I love that reminder. I appreciate it so much. I appreciate you being here today, CJ.
Thank you, Tim. What an honor. I appreciate you reaching out.
Yeah, no problem. We'll have to do it again.
All righty, my friend.
See ya. Well, thank you so much for being here for this episode. We are so glad to have you. If you would do me a huge, huge favor, if you have a comment, leave it. Just to engage if you're on YouTube. If you will rate us on whatever podcast you're in, that would be awesome for us. That would just help get the word out there. And as always, like, subscribe, do all of those things. Share with others that are in ministry that you think this would be encouraging for. We would love that too. But thank you so much for all the engagement, including getting to this point in this episode and listening this far. We are so glad that you were here today, and we'll see you next time.